Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Burger King's always been very interesting, but I could introduce you to a lot of extremely interesting people that you probably don't want to have an entire meal with, or they don't feel that their personality is really that appealing. That could be used to describe the relationship in the marketing that Burger King had for years. I'll use an example here. The Moldy Whopper was absolutely riveting, and it was a way that we tried to communicate. We used real ingredients, that we didn't use preservatives. Ultimately, however, when you've got the Whopper on a huge screen and it's got mold all over it, doesn't inspire you to go to a restaurant and order a Whopper.
Running a business means solving problems. I tell you how the smartest entrepreneurs do it. Hi, I'm Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, and this is Problem Solvers. In mid-February, I was just flipping through Instagram, and a video featuring the president of Burger King popped up, and he says, "Hello, I'm the president of Burger King. Here's my phone number. Call me." And then a number pops up on the screen, and I watched this and I thought, okay, this is genius, because who that loves Burger King doesn't want to call the president of Burger King? But also, I wonder, what is going on at Burger King right now? Surely somebody was thinking, you know, we need to, or we want to create an even stronger dialogue with our consumer. And what better way to do that than to put the president of the company out there and give out a phone number? This is obviously going to drive a ton of attention, a ton of engagement, but why? What is happening at Burger King that's driving that thought? And now, because I am the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, I get to ask people like the president of Burger King, what is going on? And so today I am so delighted to be joined by Tom Curtis, who is not just giving out his phone number, but is doing all sorts of exciting things at Burger King. Perhaps you also heard about the new Whopper happening at Burger King. So that's just the beginning. Tom, welcome to Problem Solvers. I'm so excited you're here.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So, Tom, let's start there. I know there is a lot happening at Burger King, and I want to hear what your approach is and what you're thinking. And I'll tell you where my mind immediately went was Burger King's whole thing has been about customization, about having it your way. And so there's always been this messaging inside the brand of talking to consumers. But that you put that phone number out there and that you have spoken so loudly to consumers about how much you want that dialogue, to me, says that something must be going on over at Burger King that is leading to this action, that is craving more customer dialogue, and I'd love to hear what that is.
Yeah, so Jason, I loved how you opened this up. You talked about engagement, and you also talked about attention, and we're certainly looking for both. So on the engagement side, when I got here, we started talking to customers by wearing our uniforms or wearing our logo wear when we would travel. And we'd get in all sorts of really interesting conversations. And some of those conversations led us to the work that we've done over the last 4 or so years. And now we'd also like to inspire a little bit of attention around those things that we've been working on for this last 4 years or so. So,
well, actually, you know what? Before you go any further, I just want to point out that that is not the first time that I have heard wearing the brand apparel drives really meaningful insights.
Yeah, you can get some information through a spreadsheet, but really the best way to understand what somebody's thinking is to ask them yourselves, or to have them approach you, like we say, when we're at the airport or when we're traveling, going to the grocery store, what have you. And the listening campaign that you mentioned, the one that where I gave out my phone number, was really a way to amplify that walk through the airport, that walk through the grocery store. And the things that we learned confirmed everything that we knew about the brand at the time. Once again, 4 years ago, the brand had gotten old, tired, irrelevant, and we wanted, but there was a latent love and there was a nostalgia around the brand. People wanted to return to it, but they just needed a reason.
That's super interesting. Can you take me back to the problem part of what you were just describing? You said the brand had felt a little stale. People wanted to come back to it, but they needed a reason or they needed an invitation. Talk to me about diagnosing that kind of problem and then how to engage people in a way that brings them back.
So when I was younger, my parents took me to Burger King. And as I raised my kids, I took them to Burger King. But somewhere around 30 years ago for me, I stopped going. I stopped taking my kids. And that was generally because I had a bad experience or the food didn't meet my expectation. So I went away from the brand, and the Creepy King nor any of the limited time offers were not enough to induce me to give it another try. And so that had us looking at the problem like that. Like, what is it that people need to feel to actually come back to a brand that they had a latent love for?
Did you ever consider doing something Domino's-like? Right? Domino's very famously announced, our pizza sucked and now it's better, which was so smart because it attacked that thing that you're describing here, which is people grew up with this brand. They have an affinity towards it. They have a dissatisfaction. And to hear the brand voice the dissatisfaction is to earn trust.
So I'm sure you're aware, but I actually spent 35 years at Domino's. So I started my career there, spent many, many years there, still love the brand. And I was there during the turnaround. And yes, there was our pizza sucked kind of tone to what they did. And although history doesn't repeat itself, it does often rhyme. Mm. And I think if you really pay close attention to what we've been doing and what Domino's did back in 2010, it is an effort to be transparent and an effort to be honest and open with our guests and with America. And if you watch the advertising that started in the Oscars and continues to this day, you'll hear in there an acknowledgement that we haven't done everything right over the years and that we do feel like there are points in time where we let Americans down. And I think acknowledging that is an expression of honesty that people appreciate and that they respond to. You know, often you learn this through a spouse or a loved one, just saying you're sorry and really meaning it and really listening at how you can be better can make a huge difference in a relationship. And at the end of the day, that's what this is. It's a relationship.
So having seen this play out at Domino's and now Burger King, I'd love to hear you talk about how to get internal buy-in for this kind of thing, because it's got to be, and I've never experienced this myself, I've never led a international brand that's going to engage with this kind of conversation. But I imagine that it feels a little scary.
The most difficult conversations and the hardest folks to convince are the franchise owners, because they've often been with the brand for 30, 40, even 50 years, and they've worked hard and done a good job, but often some of their neighbors have not. And so, you know, when you talk about a brand, you're talking about the collective brand, so you're talking about them as well. So I think getting them comfortable with this idea is part of the challenge. However, what they knew and what I knew was that, once again, we had been working on this for 4 years. And when people go away from your brand, they don't just naturally come back. They need something to incite them to come back. And I think there's a sense of pride in the work that's been done over the last 4 years to improve operations, the restaurants, the quality of the franchise base and the franchisees that we have here. And that inspired them to be open to this idea. And certainly the traffic and the interest that we've seen in the brand because of it has confirmed that it's the right thing to do.
You know, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about, God, I wish I could remember whose bit this is. As a leadership guy who I interviewed on the show a while ago, but what he argued was that leaders, and this is a little different than what you're talking about, but it's going to circle right back to what you just said. He said leaders have started to valorize vulnerability. And everyone thinks it's just vulnerability is a currency. Go out there and be vulnerable. And he said, you know, but the problem is that if you're just vulnerable, then it doesn't look like you have a plan. You're not a strong leader. It's got to be vulnerability plus action so that you stand up and you say, this went wrong, and now here's what we're going to do. And that is when the vulnerability becomes this on-ramp and this trust, because you are voicing the thing that people recognize was deficient. And then you're telling them what you as the leader are going to do to make it better so that they feel like you're in control.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think that a lot of what is challenging in this exercise, if you will, is being vulnerable and humble, but also being proud. Think about those two things. They sound kind of opposite. But I think that, you know, I would not have been comfortable going out and talking about Burger King or inviting people to come back to Burger King and promising them a better experience if we hadn't done the work first. I have actually seen a fair number of brands want to take this humility and vulnerability and then say, but we're going to be better. I don't think that's sufficient. I think you have to do a good body of the work first. Mm-hmm. You cannot just say, I'm going to be better. The proof has to be in the pudding. You have to have shown the effort before you have the right to say, we are better. And at the same time, acknowledge that you're still not perfect. You still have opportunity. And you want to hear more about how you can continue on that journey. That's where there's sincerity and honesty in what a brand is doing.
Mm-hmm. Tom, why don't more brands, you think, listen to their customers? I feel like brands do it in focus group ways, if you're a large enough brand. But I often talk to company leaders at all sizes, and they're wrestling with some problem. And I say, well, have you directly talked to your customer about this? Do you understand exactly the way that they're articulating the problem that you're trying to solve for them? And they often haven't. And I imagine that part of what got Burger King into the problem that it had in the first place was that it drifted away from listening to the consumer, which is clearly part of what you're here to rectify. Can you diagnose why brands start to drift from the consumer like that?
I think all brands believe that they listen to their consumer. But once again, they often do that through spreadsheets, or they do that through some major work of analysis that's done by a team and not directly by themselves. And once again, I know this through the relationships that I have with people outside of work. I only truly understand them when I have one-on-one interactions with them, when I sit and have a meal with them, when I spend time on a park bench just having a conversation. The nuance in what they have to say, the inflection in their voice, really leads to a deeper understanding of what they love or what they hate or what they want to see in the relationship that I have with them. Why wouldn't that be true in your workplace as well? Why wouldn't that be true in the relationships that you have with your guests?
Tom, I want to ask you about all the other things happening at Burger King, but one more question just on the listening and engaging with customers, which is building off of that you are taking some of those calls. And it reminds me, I had a conversation once with Ivan Zhao, who's the CEO and co-founder of Notion, the software company, and his phone was blowing up nonstop as we were talking. And I was like, what is that? And it was every single time a customer like submits any kind of comment, like any kind of product question, anything, his phone gets pinged. And I was like, that is madness that you have that. And he said, he's like, it's just really valuable for me as the leader to be seeing the dialogue that's taking place. I can't look at all of it, but like, I want to be seeing it. I never want to be detached from it. So I have sort of a two-parter here, which is like, number one, What has it been like for you as the leader to be engaging at the customer level like this in such a concentrated way? And then two, what is the other system that's taking place? You've got 41,000, you said, customer calls that came in. So what system did you guys build to process that, to track it, to categorize it? What are you doing with all that data?
We had this as a two-week process, and I think we're 6 weeks in, and I continue to take as many calls as I can a day. Some days it's 20 calls. Some days it's 10. Some days it's none, unfortunately. And what we've
20
had
calls is a lot. That's a lot of calls, Tom. That's a lot of time that you're spending on this.
So, well, half of them are people just wanting to tell you, hey, we really love what we experienced in Eastern Maryland yesterday right. or in Paducah, Kentucky. And let me tell you about what my mom said when I took her into the restaurant and how it reminded her of when she was a kid. And once again, those can be very short, but incredibly uplifting. I get to pass those back directly to the teams and say, you created a special day for this person. And it inspires them to perform even better. You know, a culture of praise will go a lot farther than a culture of criticism. And that culture of praise, we're just as dedicated to that as we are to passing on actionable feedback that restaurants can act on.
That's a great point. And also, it's a rare opportunity for someone at your level to be hearing the praise. The complaints might get to your level if it's serious enough, if some bad thing happened at some location. But rarely is someone able to tell the president of a company the scale of Burger King, hey, I just had a really nice time at this random location in Maryland. And then for you to be able to reach out the team in Maryland, that is pretty unique.
And it doesn't happen unless you engage directly with your guests. But you also asked about the process, because to your point, with 41,000 incoming calls and more coming in every day, I guess since we're about a month and a half in, we're averaging about 1,000 calls a day. Wow. We have to figure out how to have a human interaction with every one of those calls.
Yeah.
So we have a team that we assembled several months ago that was prepared to take all of the incoming. We didn't know how much it would be at first. We didn't know if it would be 5 calls a day. And so we had some social media lined up just in case nobody called. Turned out within several days, we had more of a backlog that we could manage. So we have people who will engage with every guest with a voice and with a human being behind it. If they have some really strong desire to talk directly to the president, they will put that in a queue for me to return their call. I will do as many calls as I can do a day. My leadership team now is also helping return some of those calls. So if there's a call, for example, on the digital experience, my chief digital officer will call that individual back. But everybody's getting a human interaction. And if they really want to speak to me, then I will get to them.
You've denigrated spreadsheets a couple times in this conversation, but is there a spreadsheet that is tracking what people are saying or what trends are coming up? I imagine over 41,000 data points, there's some pretty unique things that you can learn from.
Yeah, and I don't want to denigrate spreadsheets or AI, because we are using them to analyze the 41,000 data points, to your point, that we have incoming. And we're learning things like people love our original chicken sandwich. People want us to improve our French fries. There is inconsistency in our hospitality from restaurant to restaurant that needs to be addressed. How do we do that so that we are consistently a friendly brand? We're learning data points about individual locations, and we're learning also insights about the brand that we can use for brand actions going forward, and new products that we should launch, or products that we should elevate, or products that we should protect. So AI and the spreadsheets help us in all of that. But once again, what we have to prioritize is the human interaction and listening to people and the emotion in their voice and the things that they're passionate about directly if we're really going to understand our consumer.
All right. So as I said, this is not the only thing you're doing at Burger King. And you laid out a situation where a number of years ago, the brand had felt stale, and you're not going to solve that just by giving out a phone number. So can you walk me through some of the other things you had diagnosed and then spent years resolving?
Right. So as I mentioned to you, when I came here, I had left the brand because of a bad experience that I had had. And then as I watched the brand as a non-guest, I didn't see any changes in the restaurant. And so I was never inspired to go back to a Burger King for maybe 15 years prior to actually coming here to manage the brand. And I knew when I came here that the brand had gotten dated, that the customer experience was not at the level that it should be. And once again, using the spreadsheets that you get and the analysis that you get when I arrived here, I knew that that was far more true than I even gave it credit for when I came here. So, you know, I had to create a burning platform with our board of directors, with our franchisees, and with our operators to say, guys, this has been headed in the wrong direction for a long time. And if we don't do something dramatic to change the course of history, then we'll continue to decline. And what I was most inspired by was how the board came, stood up to the challenge and said, hey, we will invest first in the brand alongside the franchisees in both marketing and in the condition of the restaurants, as long as when the EBITDA, the profitability of the restaurant starts to improve, the franchisees are required to invest back in it as well. And so we put that 1-2 mechanism in place where RBI first invested, Burger King first invested in the brand. That investment begot an investment from the franchisees. And now we've created a virtuous cycle that interrupted the vicious cycle that was in place when this management team arrived.
What were the primary investments in? I mean, you said you know, the kind of condition of the stores, so that that's clear. The marketing, I mean, Burger King marketing has always been around, but I suppose refreshing it, giving it a more visibility. Like, tell me where you saw the largest opportunities and where that investment went into.
I'll start with marketing, even though marketing is kind of the last important thing that you need to do. You need to really make improvements before you can market them. But because the brand had been declining over the course of several decades, the advertising voice, which comes from the sales, because franchisees give a certain percentage of their sales to the National Advertising Fund, but that voice had gotten quieter and quieter as the sales had declined and traffic had declined. So we, meaning Burger King Corporate, put an artificial injection into the ad fund to improve the voice of the brand. At the same time, we also co-invested with our franchisees in improving equipment at the restaurants and improving the actual restaurants themselves. So accelerating the remodel pace in the restaurants. We did all of those things simultaneously because we needed people to start to come back through that additional advertising firepower so that franchisees could start making a little bit more money that they could then put back into the restaurants. And once again, this is a virtuous cycle versus the vicious cycle that happens when you're in a decline. So I think doing those things simultaneously kickstarted the sales of the brand in 2022 and 2023. Franchisees agreed and delivered on their commitment to invest back into the restaurants. That in turn attracted more customers back to the restaurants. That in turn added sales, which added to the ad fund yet again, which allowed us to continue to grow our voice. And that is kind of a simplistic explanation of the virtuous cycle that we've created now.
Right. And it's interesting to hear you talk about this. For anyone who isn't familiar with the franchising model, you know, it's just maybe unpack this a little bit more, Tom, because you aren't just able to change or command what's going to happen at every Burger King, because Burger Kings are owned by independent business owners who are your franchisees, who think of themselves as, because they are, independent business owners who happen to have a relationship with Burger King, but they are not your employees. And I know from working with tons of franchises that there can be a lot of strain in that relationship where corporate wants to do one thing, they want to roll out some changes, and the franchisees are saying, like, hey, I'm running my business over here. Don't tell me what to do. Don't cost me more money. And so you have to navigate a lot of personal relationships, a lot of tricky conversations in order to get a coordinated movement like this across all of Burger King.
Absolutely. And the franchisees here had not had a history of a strong, frictionless relationship with the franchisor. And part of this Reclaim the Flame plan that we launched in 2022 was an agreement, once again, for us to invest first. And if their restaurant level profitability improved, then they would agree to invest in their restaurants and in advertising. So that signaled to them a commitment by us to be concerned with their franchise profitability, their restaurant profitability. The other thing that I think, frankly, helped here is the fact that I was a franchisee for 20 years myself, and I have been very committed to understanding and to honoring the fact that the only way that these franchise brands work is if the franchisees make money and they can invest it back in the brand. Franchisees are with these brands much longer than corporate personnel. Like I mentioned, I've been here for 5 years. Most of the franchisees that have been here for 10, 20, 30 years. Sometimes their parents and their grandparents were in the business. So they're all in.
I appreciate that explanation because it really shows the wisdom of the way in which, in the order in which you guys did this. Because there's another version of this, which is, hey, new guy Tom Curtis has a crazy plan and the franchisees have to pay for it. And they're going to be like, no, I'm not interested in that. But instead, it's, hey, new guy Tom Curtis has a plan. We're going to fund it. And then once you see that it works, we would like your investment. And at that point, if they're making more money and they're seeing that you went first and you're investing in the plan, it's a lot easier to bring them along.
What even makes that more challenging is if they've lived in an environment with rapid turnover in management and in a management team that's focused more on the short term. And then you walk in, and even if you say, hey, hi, I'm Tom Curtis, and I care about your profitability, the response to that is, yeah, prove it. And I think that, once again, the way that we constructed this Reclaim the Flame plan with, I'll prove it, because we're going to help your profitability first before we ask you to invest, was the only way that we could really partner with them.
Tom, we talked a little bit about the marketing, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on messaging Burger King now and going forward. Burger King has had a history of great marketing moments. I often dissect great marketing on LinkedIn, and Burger King comes up pretty regularly because if you look in the history of the brand, there's a lot of really clever stuff, and even some Creepy King stuff is really clever. But I'd love to know what you're thinking now as you hit this brand refresh. You don't want this brand to feel completely different, but you want it to signal that it's been upgraded, that we're listening to you, that something different is happening. So how does that get translated in the marketing?
Well, Jason, to your point, Burger King's always been very interesting, but I could introduce you to a lot of extremely interesting people that you probably don't want to have an entire meal with, or they don't feel that their personality is really that appealing, and you don't want to take them home to your family. Mm-hmm. And I think that that could be used to describe the relationship in the marketing that Burger King had for years. I think I'll use an example here. The Moldy Whopper was absolutely riveting to consumers. They thought, that is super interesting.
Right.
And it was a way that we tried to communicate that we used real ingredients, that we didn't use preservatives. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, however, when you've got the Whopper on a huge screen, and it's got mold all over it, it doesn't inspire you to go to a restaurant and order a Whopper. It gives you a little bit of a gross interpretation of a Whopper. And the same thing could be said for the Creepy King as well. Like, very yeah. interesting that he woke up one morning and he was a stranger in a woman's bed. And I think that was jarring. Mm-hmm. However, it didn't cause you to want to pack up the kids in a minivan and drive down to your nearest Burger King and order
right.
a Whopper.
Right. So these are, in other words, like these are, there's a difference between the kind of thing that gets everybody in the advertising industry excited and the kind of thing that drives the average consumer to buy a burger.
Absolutely. But I think right now we're actually finding both. Mm. Because what you see now, once again, is the qualities that people love in people. Humility, honesty, transparency, a desire to get better, a commitment to get better. All of these things are appealing. Everybody loves a comeback story. And that's what we've been able to clearly articulate in today's marketing. And that's why people are saying, we're with you. We want to come see what you're doing. We want to give you a shot. And so I think you can do both, but it's never easy.
So describe Burger King marketing now or going forward.
I think Burger King going forward has to be a genuine and likable brand in addition to be an interesting brand. We found ways to be interesting in the past, and then we found ways to try to get attention. But you've got to, at the same time, be a brand that people want to be around. And once again, that is by fulfilling all of those qualities that are appealing in the humans that you know that you want to spend time with.
Mm-hmm. You released a new Whopper, an updated Whopper. How do you describe the Whopper now? What is the change to the Whopper? And like, tell me about. So I'm hesitating on the language because I was going to say it was playing with, but that is too flip for surely what you've done. I mean, this is the hero product of the brand. Any change to it, I'm sure, does not come lightly. You don't want to reinvent it. You want to improve it. So I don't know. Just take me into the thinking and the execution of upgrading the Touchstone product.
Jason, you're absolutely right. Words matter here, yeah. And what we did mattered, and the nuance of what we did mattered. And the word that I like to use the most is subtlety. Mm. Because when you have an iconic product, and the Whopper was already recognized as the best burger in QSR, if you say we reinvented it or we changed it, you're going to irritate some folks. You're going to tell people everything that you testified to, that you went and enjoyed every day, we were lying to you. It really wasn't what we wanted to serve, or we could have done a lot better. The fact is that the way that the Whopper patty interacts with the fresh ingredients and the condiments, all of that together, there's a magic to that. And there's a magic that's always been there to that. So if you now look at the changes that we made, probably the most significant one was the box and the packaging. And what that was wrapping this iconic product in a tuxedo instead of a leisure suit. And it's really treating it with the respect that it deserves. In addition to that, a pillowier, glazed bun that helps the sesame seeds stay on it uniformly, and then a creamier mayonnaise. If you add all that up, you could almost call that unremarkable changes. But what they really are is nuanced changes to elevate how we treat the Whopper and how we serve the Whopper. We started looking at changes to the Whopper 3 years ago, and we looked at some fairly sweeping changes. And consumers told us loud and clear, don't mess with it like that. Don't change it that much. We love the Whopper. And I think that we really have hit the subtlety and the nuance of this in exactly the way that we should, and in exactly the way that both lovers of the Whopper for many years continue to love it, But people who haven't tried it and haven't had one in many years have said it's worthy of another try.
You know, right. So it's, I like that contrast that you just made there, where you said, look, you could say these are some real cosmetic changes here. Or I suppose you could say, Tom, these are the changes that are informed by ongoing dialogue with consumers. It's not just what you guys who run Burger King think should be done with the Whopper, but rather you got to put that up against what's actually going to be meaningful and seem additive to the consumer that's already familiar with this product.
And often in consumer testing, you find you compare one patty to the next or one way of changing the texture of the patty, and the consumer might say, yes, I like this texture. Or if you change the cut of the lettuce, consumers might say, you know, 60% to 40%, yes, I prefer this cut of the lettuce. But when you just ask a consumer what they think about a Whopper and they tell you that they love it and that they don't want you to change it, it leads you to a different place than just the, once again, spreadsheet-driven consumer feedback that you get from doing focus groups on specific aspects of the burger.
Yeah. Yeah, spreadsheets are really taking a beating today in this conversation, Tom. Final thing, which is this. I'm curious for your perspective on what you think someone like you, which is to say the leader of a brand where people may not have known the name of the president of Burger King before. What do you think is the right usage for someone in your position for a brand? And let's just contextualize that. Some brands are putting their CEOs or presidents out very front and center. Some are not at all. Some are trying it. Some get a little dinged every once in a while. Like, of course, your colleague over at McDonald's who became an internet sensation for a too small bite of his burger. There's some risk here. There can also be a lot of reward. And in an era of social media where people keep using this line, and I do believe it, where people connect with people, not with brands, there's a lot of value in putting somebody's face out there as the face of a brand beyond the marketing, you know, whatever face you might hire for consistent marketing. What do you think the role is for someone like you at a large brand today and, beyond what maybe you've already done or just even not even just thinking about you, but more generally the leader of a brand and how you represent yourself and the brand on social media?
Yeah, I don't think there's a role for the leader of a brand to be in social media or to be in TV advertising and brag about the things that he or she has done. But I do think there's a role for the leader to acknowledge that the buck stops here and that there's a real human being that feels accountable to what every person feels when they go visit a Burger King. It hurts when I get a call and somebody's been mistreated or they got bad product when they've spent their time and their money to come to our brand and given us their trust. And it makes my day when somebody tells me about a special experience that they had with their family. And this is how the CMO here, Joel Yashinsky, convinced me to get involved in this campaign. Is he said, Tom, if the buck stops here with you and if you really are accountable to what goes on here, then you should be able to stand up and say that. So I think that convinced me that I did have something to say, and there was a purpose to me being involved in this campaign.
Were you hesitant or resistant at first?
My first, second, third, and maybe fourth answer was absolutely not. I've lived a life of anonymity, and it's been a happy life. And I know how fickle social media can be. And I was concerned that my persona might not come across in the way that I truly believe that I am, because it's only done in short microseconds in social media. But, you know, I was challenged by the agency and by the CMO that if you are the leader of this brand and you speak passionately about it with us, why wouldn't you be willing to share your point of view and how much you care about the brand with the public? And there's no way, if you do that honestly and transparently and with humility, that that can go wrong.
And I'd say that's been proven out. I just want to say it back to you, because I really like the point you made. In other words, what you're saying is the role of a leader today is not necessarily to be the face of the brand, but to be the face of the accountability of the brand, to know that you're not the person selling it, but you are the person representing that real human beings are behind this, and they can and should be responsive to the real human beings that are buying.
I think you got that right, Jason, because I just got goosebumps from my toes to my head when you said it. Yes, absolutely. I want to be accountable for everybody's experience here. And I know I can't get every single one of them right in the moment, but I can celebrate when we get it right and make sure we do it better next time when we don't.
Tom Curtis, president of Burger King, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Jason.